Hey everyone, it is another exciting episode of This Is Whole Life. There is lots to talk about today. And of course, it's Orlando, Florida, and I'd like to say it's the Sunshine State, but I'm not sure it's true anymore.
A little rainy today.
It's been a lot rainy lately. So I will leave you to your own ideas as to why that is. But anyway.
I feel like you've got me curious, Randy. I figured it was just the rainy season in Florida.
I have theories.
You have theories, huh?
I do. But that voice you heard thundering across like rolling thunder of an afternoon storm here in Florida is our lead pastor, Ken Wetmore. Next to him is our worship pastor, Melody Bachman. And this guy, just kidding, Lucas.
Oh, thank God you remember my name.
You remember my name. And someone said, you never say your name is Randy. So my name is Randy. Welcome. Here we are. So my theory is it's the Wetmore summer series.
Ah, I see. There we go.
Yeah, yeah. And so I really feel like
Because it's like this every July.
Well, it used to be like this every July. But if you think about the last 3 or 4 years, July and August, seemingly, now I guess you'd have to go to Noah to know for sure. And that's not the old Noah. That's the new Noah. N-O-O-N-O-A-A, right? .org,
I think.
.gov. And you'd have to look at the actual rainfall. But it feels like our afternoon, 4 o'clock, like on the money.
Yeah.
Like it used to be. Like when we first moved here, it was like 4 o'clock every day. I was like, this is crazy.
Yep.
And it seemed like we haven't had that for a little while, and now it's back. But it's got to be Wetmore putting things in perspective and righting the wrongs of our firmament.
I'm just glad because I have a sprinkler system that's not working properly, so this has been working out really good for me.
It's working out great for me for this lawn.
I still probably had to get it fixed, but, you know,
yeah.
Now I can kick the can down the road a little bit.
It's been a couple of weeks since I heard you talking about, hey, how do you put a...
I need to get that whole sprinkler nozzle thing figured out.
That's awesome.
No idea what I'm doing.
Ah, Florida problems for
that's
sure.
That's what YouTube is for.
YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes, but YouTube will lead you astray from time to time. You got to make sure you hit at least 3, I feel like.
Well, you got to watch it all the way through and make sure that 5 minutes in, the person doesn't say, well, I've never done this before, but you're experiencing this with me.
And that, my friends, is a tip from Melanie, who obviously has had this happen before. She knows
I'm a little scarred. Yes.
A little scarred. No problem. So I heard it from a ton of people of y'all that were here in person on Saturday for the Friday evening story time with Ken. And so we're trying to figure out a way to stay out of copyright jail and also bring you some Bible stories. So stay tuned because I feel like the response that we got for a kind of a last minute ask and then a fulfillment and a episode drop on time that we don't usually drop episodes. There was about, I think Saturday morning there was 53, I think, listens already. So people caught the feed and was like, Ken reads a story, huh? Let's check this out.
And my favorite was the people who told me that they listened to it as they were going to bed.
Yeah.
They were, yeah.
Yeah, Scott, yeah. Karen, here's looking at you. And he started it without her. And she's like, wait, you're not going to include me on this? So he restarted. I wonder if we got 2 listens for that. Maybe. Maybe. So that might have been.
We only had 51.
Right. And then that was 52 and 53. So anyway, because pretty much what the story is if it's in the public domain, maybe if it's prior to 1925, which goes back 100 years. And then when you look at all the good stories, none of them are in the public domain.
Not yet.
People are still like, no. People are still.
Just a one-off. Don't worry. We will.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
Yeah. So, and I think that, and so I thought that was really excellent thinking about this, the story, and it was well received, and I enjoyed it, and my family enjoyed it. See, we got 4 listens, and I only played it once. See, that's how you never know how many people truly are listening.
I played it once, too.
Did you?
So
I listened.
It was a one-for-one?
Yep.
Yeah, see? So, and then Ken started his message with, as I'm thinking about all this, and the first thing he said was, what's preventing you from doing something you've wanted to do or felt called to do? Well, doggone it, I think this is, we're feeling called to do this story thing, and I think copyright is what's preventing us. So I think we're good.
I guess we're actually going to have to do our own work and write our own stories.
Man, we can't just tell everybody else.
Although, I guess are we really writing our own stories if we just take the Bible stories and retell them? I don't know.
Well, as far as I know, that's in the public domain.
Yeah. It's probably more than 100 years old.
Just beat it. Just beat it. We're lucky. So, was this one of the messages that you did the swaparoo on, or was this always planned?
This one was planned.
This one was planned. I think I've heard this story preached on actually a fair amount, but I guess I never really knew. Well, first off, I didn't know, which a lot of people were like in the chat going like, a Candace, this is cool. Like, this is something we didn't know. And really who the Ethiopian was.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you guys, maybe my favorite part of the early sermon, you told, hey, kids, ask your parents what a eunuch is. So did you want to tell everyone since we're on the podcast now, did you want to tell everyone what a eunuch was?
Yeah, it's generally a man who's been castrated.
Yeah.
If you don't know what castrated is,
you have to
go ask your mom and dad.
I actually have a whole book on that.
On castration?
Wow. Yeah.
Techniques or what?
No. It's just like the history of castration.
About why?
What makes it interesting?
What starts it? Do we know?
Yeah.
No, I don't know what starts it.
But actually. What's the, so even in this case, what, why, like, what's the point of, I mean, is this, this I mean, it's not an Ethiopian thing.
No, it's
very much, it was all over.
But culturally, what was
well,
it
well, basically, you know, for example, kings would have eunuchs be the ones to take care of the harem. And there are some things that you don't have to worry about if you have
sense.
A eunuch in charge of the harem.
I didn't think of that
so
one.
So that's one thing. Yeah.
But who wants that
and
job?
And then the other part in this story. Well,
I don't know that you always had a choice.
Well, no, I know I'm saying. No, but I mean, is this like a, like, do people volunteer? I mean, is there some kind of like, hey, I'm someone special because this is, I'm now available to the king, and this is a place, like, this is seen as a position of honor or something, or?
I don't know who would sign up for it. I think probably there were people who did it intentionally, but.
Well, Paul talks about those who have made themselves eunuchs and those who.
Eunuchs for the kingdom.
Yeah.
And
so I think there was some, I think generally this was something that, was probably not your first choice of careers where you're like, hey, let me sign up for that. There's, I fall into the camp of people who believe that Daniel is a eunuch.
Really?
The prophet Jeremiah, I believe, says that when he's making his prophecies against Israel because of their, what they've been up to, he says, basically the king of Babylon's going to come, he's going to take your young men away, he's going to make them eunuchs, and so on and so forth. And I think that there's no record of Daniel having a wife, which doesn't necessarily mean that he didn't have a wife, but there's like no mention whatsoever of that. And for somebody in his position, based on what Jeremiah says, I just think that probably Daniel was made a eunuch.
And then you mentioned Moses mentioned that there was, that eunuchs weren't in the, allowed in the assembly.
Correct.
What about a eunuch was preventing them?
They weren't whole. They weren't able to procreate. They weren't, and.
Wow.
Yeah.
Basically, if you had anything different about you whatsoever, you could
then you
enter.
Weren't.
Yeah.
That is one on a long list of.
So,
of things.
What were some of the other things on that list, Melanie? Do you remember off the top of your head, like cripples, if you're crippled in any way, right, or deformed limbs? So there, I mean, it was basically there's this long list of unless you are.
Well, people thought the Romans were. Well, I guess the Romans killed theirs if they weren't. When you weren't just not allowed to the assembly, you weren't allowed to live. So I was like. Okay.
Right. So, and it does appear that as time went by, that those rules loosened up, that there was more of an allowance for that. But it was still that you were never really a full, you weren't eligible for big positions and things like that.
So what was your backup? Like if you're not allowed to be in the assembly, you're not allowed certain things. I mean, what was your life? Do we know?
It was hard. You were considered, you were less than, and that's, you know, yeah.
That's wild. Do we know if he was from, if the eunuch was still living in Ethiopia? I mean, is that what we're, because I just was curious. I'm yes. like, how far is it from Jerusalem to Ethiopia?
Which it, is it's a good journey. Probably what happened was he probably took the chariot carriage from Egypt up to Jerusalem, which wouldn't have been, it would have been a good trip, but it wouldn't have been horribly long from Egypt to Jerusalem. But then probably from Egypt, you probably would have gotten on the Nile and taken a boat down the Nile.
Because it's like 1,500 miles, they said, when I looked it up.
Yeah.
From there to some, from a city that it just, for some reason, said specifically Marie, M-E-R-O-E. Yeah. That'd be 1,500 miles. I'm like, this guy, so like.
He traveled.
Yeah. I mean, and if you knew that you weren't going to be seen the same as everybody else, or that once you got there, you weren't going to be allowed to be in
there were still ways to, I mean, it's not like you couldn't show up for worship, and there were places where you could be.
Oh, okay.
But you just couldn't enter the main.
The main.
Assembly.
That still seems like a, that seems like a heck of a journey for, I mean, I guess if that's your station, then you do what you have to.
Well, but have you ever traveled to a place that you really wanted to see that you knew you weren't going to be able to see everything there, but you would get close enough? I mean,
yeah, that's
you
fair.
Know, I've traveled to Italy, went to the Vatican. There were just places in there I knew I wasn't going to be allowed in. That's fine. I thought it was just neat to see.
Yeah.
Same thing, Salt Lake City. I did a tour of the Mormon Tabernacle area. Not obviously they don't let you inside, but you can do tours around the area. I'm not Catholic. I'm not Church of Jesus Christ, Latter-day Saints. But I'm curious about what that is. And so I was curious to see, you know, these places that I've read about and heard things about and, you know, see it for myself. And so the difference with the Ethiopian was that most likely he was a convert to Judaism, a Gentile convert. And so for him, there are certain things that you say, you know what, even if I'm not going to be allowed to experience this to the fullest, I want to get as close as I can. And I want to have that experience. And I mean, today, even for in Islam, people will travel to Mecca. It's just part of if you can do it, if you're a part of Islam, then you're supposed to make that pilgrimage. And for people in Jesus' day, if you could make it to Jerusalem, it was just if you were a convert to Judaism or you were Jewish, going to Jerusalem, the city of David, where the temple was at, that was a big deal.
Yeah. I mean, it has to be, because you think that when you hear that when Philip comes upon his carriage, he's already reading from a scroll of Isaiah. So clearly even on the journey, he's taking time to, you know, to read up and to try to maybe understand and I thought that was maybe one of the more unique Bible stories, in that here's someone that's traveling a long, long way, clearly without all the, I mean, it always seems like in the Bible, there, things are compartmentalized. Maybe that's just the way things were written for the stories. It's like, this happened here and this happened here, and it's all places that we recognize. So maybe the Ethiopian coming from such a distance just makes it feel different.
Well, it could be that the Ethiopian is reading the book of Isaiah on his way home. Maybe he bought that scroll in Jerusalem. Maybe he had it before he went to Jerusalem. And if he had and he'd read through it a couple different times, then he would have read Isaiah 56, because when he meets Philip, right, he's reading Isaiah 53. But if he'd already read this scroll a couple times, or maybe he'd read it back home.
So he was on his way home?
He was on his way home.
Okay, I missed that part.
But if he... But if he had read this prior to coming to Jerusalem, he might have read Isaiah 56, starting verse 3. It says, "Don't let foreigners who commit themselves to the Lord say, 'The Lord will never let me be a part of his people.' And don't let the eunuch say, 'I'm a dried up tree with no children and no future.' For this is what the Lord says, 'I will bless those eunuchs who keep my Sabbath days holy and who choose to do what pleases me and commit their lives to me. I will give them within the walls of my house a memorial and a name far greater than sons and daughters could give, for the name I will give them is an everlasting one. It will never disappear." And so I wonder if maybe he did read Isaiah before and he thought, you know what, I'm going to take God up on that. I'm going to show up. I'm going to see if I'm welcome. I'm going to see if there is a place for me. And I don't know what he found when he got to Jerusalem. It'd be an interesting, I think that would be an interesting conversation in heaven with the eunuch to find out what his life story was. And I mean, certainly the before I think is interesting, and the after would be very interesting as well. But he has this experience. He goes to Jerusalem. He's riding home. He's reading the prophet Isaiah. And then Philip shows up and says, hey, let me tell you a little bit more about that.
It seems like, okay, like what you just said, maybe he's read this other part. Maybe he's taking God up on it. And it seems like, though, even where he's at is in some place of a beginner or early in his walk or after being converted. And I just had this picture of Philip was just like super chill, comes across and is like, oh, man, this is what a cool opportunity. And just like totally is the person that you would hope to meet if you were someone searching and you're like, hey, I've heard some pretty cool stuff. I haven't really seen any of it yet, but this sounds really good. I think I want to learn more about it. And I'm like, it would be like the way Philip took this on. And then to be able to just look at him and you know, maybe it's the Holy Spirit that's just like, yep, he's ready. And to be in tune with that and do it. And I'm like, I have a picture of this happening. The place where it happens, I can see it in my mind. And it's a really cool picture. And it's a really comforting picture, I think, it should be for us, that when, you know, we get to do, this year we've done quite a few baptisms here at Whole Life already. And I get to put the videos together and get to talk to people and get to listen to them. And, you know, have them, I feel a little bit like it's the same thing. Everyone's scared of the camera. They don't really know what to do. They don't like the lights. They don't like having to kind of bear all of their soul to the camera. And it's a little difficult in trying to be the person that's just like, no, don't worry about the cameras. Just tell me. Tell me what you feel. Tell me what you think, what you see. And just the idea that Philip takes someone that would feel probably still have a lot of those feelings of I'm not allowed, or I went, it was great, but I really wish I could have seen more. Or there's just a lot of things going through, I think, his mind when they're doing this. It's just always a really cool picture to be the bird on a limb or something to see that actually go down. I think would have been really, really cool. If it, of course, maybe what I think how it went down isn't like that.
I'm curious why the Spirit sent Philip instead of the Spirit just explaining it.
I'd like to think that it's Philip just being like in his morning, whatever. Hey, you know, send someone to me today that I can be a light to, or that I can be of service to, or, and maybe, you know, a lot of times you think of, well, it'll be something, you know, maybe need something to eat, something to drink, or.
So this was more for Philip than for the Ethiopian.
I think so. Well, maybe. I mean, if you were a eunuch and you were feeling like maybe you have some issues with people not accepting you because maybe you're carrying some things that, you know, I'm not whole or that kind of feeling, and then someone comes along and is like, oh, I got you. Maybe that goes a long way to. Not, I don't want to say solve, but to bolster who you are and how you see yourself, and maybe a little glimpse of how someone who loves God loves you, and maybe then in turn how God loves you. So maybe that'd be cool if that was it. I mean, I guess either way it would be cool. But I just every time this someone tells this story or I read it, Philip makes me smile. I just think that's a
I think one of the nice cool things that God does for us is allow us to be a part of what he's doing. Mm-hmm. So was it more for Philip? Was it more for the Ethiopian? Maybe it was just for both. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think that clearly Jesus says if we don't do our job, that the rocks will cry out. And basically God has a lot of ways he can reach people and reach out to them. And I think that a lot of times we underestimate the good it is for us to be a part of that process and to be able to share to be used by God to share his love with others and make them feel cared about. I think there's also something to be said for being able to relate to the person that's sharing with you, to have another human being sharing it with you and adds substance. You know, you can have that impression in your mind. I suppose God can send an angel to talk to you too, but there's something to be said for just having another person that's like you. You say, hey, this is what I've discovered. This is what it means to me, and this is the difference it's made in my life.
Mm. Yeah. You know, just speaking of, you kind of went into, you know, baptism and kind of the roadblocks or the extra packs will make you carry around the roadblocks, crawl over, crawl under. When we talk about that, I get the picture of a like special ops guy like, yeah, I can do this. And then it's like, oh, you haven't seen our packaging yet. Hold on. I got another backpack for you. And that wall is another 20 feet taller than you thought it was. Because it seems like we're pretty good in doing that. And with Philip, it just seems like there's almost just like the basic framework of a friendship and bonding type of vibe that goes into what they're talking about, like almost like they're friends already. And to me, it just seems like Philip is either the Holy Spirit is giving him all the right moves or this is just something he's good at. But it makes both of them, I think, feel really, really good. The thing I was wondering, because we talked about, you know, if it what we put up in the way of baptism, but is there anything that makes it not right? Maybe not the right time for someone to be baptized? Yeah, get to that point?
I definitely think there's, I think there are things that make it not the right time if they're not ready to commit their lives to Christ, if they're not willing to say, hey, I want to follow Christ and be a disciple and grow, and then that would not be the right time to be baptized for sure.
Yeah.
So...
The Spirit of the Lord snatched Philip away. Wait a minute, what? I think I've missed this in other tellings or me reading it. The Spirit of the Lord snatched Philip away.
Yep.
And that's all we know.
That's it.
Ah! Well, he ended up, in somewhere in the Philistine town somewhere. And then he ended up traveling and evangelizing. Ultimately, I think he ended up in Caesarea.
And so we know more about what happens to Philip after this.
Mm-hmm. A little bit more.
A little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. He actually has four daughters who never get married, but they are all have the gift of prophecy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was that from his time with the eunuch that they were like, now we're not going to get married? We're not going to get married either, do you think?
Yeah, I don't know, Randy.
Well, I'm just, you know, I mean, if it had been one out of four, two out of four, but like four out of four, that seems like maybe something very specific, kind of like, you know, choosing to be a eunuch or not choosing.
I think that one of the things that maybe we kind of bypass rather quickly, which is interesting. We love to spend time on other items that Paul says, but Paul talks about it. He said, I wish you were all just like me and not married. I wish that you didn't. Yeah. So it wasn't necessarily an uncommon thought in the early Christian church that what's the point in getting married if Jesus is coming soon. Let's devote ourselves to spreading the gospel and spreading the word, and marriages can hinder you. That's Paul's words, actually. He says, the one who is married is divided in their intentions, but the one who is not can give themselves fully to the work of the Lord. So, you know, like I said, Paul's always an interesting one. And I think as dear Peter said, there are many who take what Peter says and weaponize or take what Paul says and weaponize it. I'm paraphrasing what Peter said, but I think he called them weak-minded people. But anyway, and twisted. Basically, he says, I don't really have a problem with what Paul's preaching, but there are people who take it and really use it in destructive ways. So anyway, yeah, just to follow up with after the Spirit takes him away, he winds up in a place called Azotus, or I don't know how to pronounce it, Azotus.
That sounds right.
And then he preaches the gospel in every town until he comes back to Caesarea.
Really?
Yep.
Wow. Well, that it's interesting when you hear the story and then how it ends, and these it's always seems to be these little nuggets of like, oh man, I wish I just knew a just a little bit more, because this is honestly a story that I think a lot of people resonate with if they stop and think about it. But there's not that much to stop and think about it. It goes very quickly, and as fast as it's almost like Philip, you get snatched away. And then verse 37, I was looking at a couple of different translations that still have it, mm-hmm. and then some others that don't. I think you said you were in agreement that it shouldn't be there, or that it, not that it shouldn't, but that you agreed with what they
thought
about.
That it was added later.
That it was added later?
Yeah. The overwhelming ad. The Seventh-day Adventist Bible commentaries are probably pretty conservative when it comes to the theological bent of them. And when they tell you that this was added later, usually that's, you can pretty much take that to be
pretty good.
If they're saying it, then
it's probably true.
probably was pretty well accepted.
So it was just basically someone trying to give a little context so that it was maybe more believable, or it just,
I think it was just a well-meaning person who's like, well, let's, you know, whoever wrote this just skipped over really quickly what the eunuch needed to do in order to be baptized. And so let's go ahead and add that in. Let's just add a quick little bit of dialogue. And again, as I mentioned in the sermon, it is theologically consistent with the rest of the New Testament. There's not, you know, verse 37, if it's included in there, is not adding some new theological twist or some wrinkle. It's very much in keeping with what you would see across the rest of the New Testament. But why it gets left out is because the original person who wrote this story in the book of Acts, Luke, most likely didn't include that in there. For him, it was not important to write that in. It might not have been important because it's just a given. It's like, well, of course everybody knows what he would have had to do. We all know this. This is a part of that. It could be that he was wanting to highlight just how rapidly this man was baptized, how quickly that happened. There's all kinds of different theories out there, and you know, no one knows for sure. But yeah, and I think that one of the important things for people, if you've heard this discussion before, and Melanie, feel free to jump in, but we don't have the original letter. We don't have the original manuscript of the book of Acts. We don't have the original manuscript of any of the books in the New Testament. We don't have, this came right from the pen of John. This came right from the pen of Matthew. This came right from the pen of Luke. We don't have any of that. What we do have is a lot of manuscripts, and there are a lot of them out there. Some of them date back to pretty close to the time when they were originally written, but most of them are probably going to be dated back to about 100 to 200, maybe even 300 or 400 years after the original manuscript was put out. And so what becomes the work of historians and theologians who specialize in this is to look through the manuscripts and see, okay, when does it look like this manuscript was written? How far out from when we think the original one was written? Where was it found? That also can play into it. Was it found in a place that would have been close to where the original writer might have put it out, or is it found somewhere very distant? What are the consistencies or inconsistencies with that manuscript compared to others? And so generally, this is a generalization, the older the manuscript is, the more reliable it's going to be considered to be. So in other words, if it appears to have been written 50 years after the original, or copied 50 years after the original, it's going to have more weight than one that was copied 300 years after the original manuscript was copied. And so historians, theologians will go back and look at these, and they will assign weight to them. What I think, and to get not to go too far down the weeds because I'm not really prepared for it today, but when you take some of the older translations of the Bible, like say the King James Version, the manuscripts that the King James Version was based off of were actually not some of the more reliable manuscripts, because we have uncovered more manuscripts in the time in the last 400 years that so we have more information. It's just like anything else. I mean, it's like medicine 400 years ago. It's evolved. It's changed. You probably, you know, want to think about updating your beliefs on bleeding and some of those things. And when it comes to the King James Version, it's a very solid translation. I'm not knocking it, but there's been more historical work that's been done. There's been more manuscripts that have become available to us. And so we're able to kind of take a look. And I think what I really would want people to take away from that is, even with all the new updates and everything, the more information we have, it really impacts less than probably 3% of the total of the New Testament. Like, maybe, and again, this is off the top of my head, but I really think it's less than 3% has any impact or any difference between it. And why I think that's important is because I think that sometimes when we have discussions like this, it can really freak people out. It's like, well, what do I believe? How do I know what's right? You know, which, and here's what I believe. If you believe in a God that loves you, that wants to communicate with you, that has an interest in you, then that God can preserve what God wants you to have. And that's my belief. I believe he's preserved his word. I believe that the best translation of the Bible is the one that you will read on a regular basis. And I know people who they'll only read one translation, but they don't even read it because they don't understand it. It's too hard. It's like the way it's worded is very difficult and for them to understand. And so they kind of keep it on the shelf. They read a couple of verses here and there. That doesn't do you any good. You need to be reading the Bible. Spend time in the Bible, read it. And so the best translation is the one that you're going to read on a regular basis. And one of the things that kind of hit me is, with all due respect to my Jehovah's Witness friends, and I do have some out there, Jehovah's Witness have made their own translation of the Bible. And in my opinion, it's to fit their theology. So they've translated the Bible to make it work for the theological points that the Jehovah's Witness want to make. And so they've gone through and created, in my opinion, a very bad translation of the Bible. It's very flawed in the way that it's translated. And from my viewpoint, it's not honestly translated. An honest translation comes in and says, we're not going to try to make theological points. We're going to try to be as faithful to what it appears the original writer has put out there as we can, and put aside our theology and translate. Just translate it for what we think. Now, that's really hard to do. But with Jehovah's Witness, when they translated their Bible, they very much translated it to create a framework for the theology that they have. One of my colleagues out in the Upper Columbia Conference when I was pastoring out there had converted from being a Jehovah's Witness to being a Seventh-day Adventist. And what I found so fascinating was that he did that reading the Jehovah's Witness Bible only.
Really?
He came to believe what the Seventh-day Adventist Church teaches based on using the Jehovah's Witness Bible exclusively. And when he told me his story, what hit me about that was, wow, if God can lead you with what I consider to be a very flawed translation of the Bible, then I think we sometimes, I see people get very hung up on translations of the Bible. And I think it's really worth it. I personally, when I'm studying, I use multiple translations. I'll try to, I'm very much no expert on biblical languages, but I'll try to go use the tools that I have within my power to look at the original language and try to understand it, see what a lot of different people say about it. So I'll do all of that. But at the end of the day, what I really do is I try to spend time in God's Word and just read it and just let it be a part of my life, because I do believe that God, you know, Jesus said, all those who seek will find.
Yeah.
And I have to believe that. If I'm seeking God with all my heart, I have to believe that God is going to not let me down and be like, well, sorry, you read the wrong translation of the Bible. It stinks to be you. Yeah. Hope you enjoy hell. That doesn't seem to be the God that I find. in the Bible, the God that's just like, hey, let's have a lot of loopholes and tricks because I don't really want you in heaven. I really want to kind of keep it down to like the hardcore people here. I find a God that says, hey, I want, the Bible says, I don't desire the destruction of the wicked. I want people to be with me in eternity. And so anyway, so that's a little bit of a tangent there, but I think it's important to think about and understand that you can trust the Bible and just find a translation that really works for you and that you enjoy reading. My favorite to read just for my devotional self and what I use often in church is the New Living Translation. One of the ones I used to study with a lot when I really wanted to see if I've got kind of a very technical is the New American Standard Bible, which I find to be very technical in the way it goes about doing things. Young's Literal Translation is another fun one if you're really looking for a very technical translation, hard to read, but very technical. And then there's so many other Contemporary English Version. That's a really one that I find easy to read.
How about The Message?
That's not a translation. That's actually a paraphrase.
Right.
And just if you don't, just to make sure everybody understands the difference between a paraphrase and a translation is a paraphrase is where somebody comes along, generally will take the language that they speak. They'll read the Bible and then they'll just put it into their own words. This is what it means to me, and this is a paraphrase. So, a translation is going to go back to the original documents or manuscripts.
Yeah.
And when I say original, I mean the best that we know. They'll look at those manuscripts and then they will translate it from those manuscripts from the original language into whatever language they're translating into.
Message is my favorite for reading. And so I do like New Living Translation a lot. I think that's probably the one if I'm thinking about what does this mean and if there's questions that are more technical that probably don't rely on the Message, but I do pick reading plans that are in the Message because I do. It makes it for reading that you can do for fun or for just for reading that just seems to sink in. And so sometimes you have to go, wait a minute, what was that? But what does that equal? What's the one I grew up hearing and then try to find the translation? But I think I know what the Message says, but I don't also know. I have to stop and think about it. So maybe it's not the best, but I do enjoy reading the Message a lot.
I'm pretty sure everything I've memorized has been in the King James Version.
Well, yeah.
Well, that's the nice
when
thing.
I'm a kid, when I was a kid, yeah, I learned course. So many, and then it's like, wait, where is that? And then I have to say it in King James before I can find it in
yes,
a different version.
Yes,
But that's the nice thing about the King James Version is it's easier to memorize because the language is distinct and different, and so you're using different words than you would normally use, and that makes it, in my opinion, far easier
kinda
to
makes
memorize.
It stick.
I will say though that I know people who have been on translation committees, and I think they're fantastic, really intelligent people with integrity. And I think that they want to be faithful to the translation task. I also think that there really is no such thing as an unbiased, culturally unbiased, or theologically unbiased translation because you have to make those decisions.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that was most eye-opening for me when I studied Greek and I studied Hebrew was that there is so much possible variation in terms of translational choices. And for me, I think it's really important to let the Bible be what it is, because if we have particular expectations or we try to build our whole theology around a word that may or may not have even been written by the person who wrote the text originally, then we might run into trouble. We run into difficulty. But if we hold the text with some degree of flexibility, I guess, with
ouch, that's
knowing,
a hard one,
though, the idea that, you know, this text that was added by a well-meaning scribe for the book of Acts, there are scribes and, you know, people who have made those additions from the very beginning. From the book of Genesis, you see additions that have been made by people who at a particular time in history wanted to clarify something for their context. So, for example, when people were in exile and they were having trouble maintaining their Jewish identity, there were scribes who came along and said, hey, by the way, here are unclean and clean meats, and check out this version of the story of Noah, where Noah takes, you know, two unclean and seven clean animals onto the ark. That's why we have two Noah's Ark Bible stories. But I think as long as we let the Bible be what it is, and we recognize it for what it is, and we realize that the people who wrote it, however inspired they may have been, also were culturally biased, also understood through their own psychological and spiritual noise. And then you have people who come along and make translational decisions, who are making translational decisions based on their own theology and their own understanding to the best of their ability. And then you have people who come along and interpret, which is called hermeneutics, who come along and interpret what other people have translated. So we have so very many layers of potential changes, of potential biases that have worked their way into the way that we understand. I mean, even doctrines like the Trinity, there are ways that we've been conditioned to see the text that help us to find the Trinity, but the Bible doesn't actually talk about a Trinity. So I guess I'm just saying, when you're reading the Bible and appreciating the Bible, appreciate it for what it is versus what you would like it to be.
Mm. Man, that's a new concept for, I think, well, I know it was kind of a new concept for me not that long ago to think that all the different things, you just like, well, this is somehow magically, this was all on the...
It's the fourth member of the Trinity.
Yeah, it was on the page, and yet... Also, like, then you have to be okay with this is God knew how this was going to work out. He knew how this process that you just multi-layered approach that you just kind of laid out for us. He knew this is how it was going to come together.
But this is what is so cool about the biblical text, because it's not just a face value thing. You know, how boring if you just read it for face value and then continue on or, you know, build your theology on a shallow understanding. When you understand the history and you understand all the different layers of fascinating things that you can uncover, and even discovering particular biases or you know, in either translation or in interpretation, and then you look at all of that information, that's a really, really rich exploration of the text versus just a surface reading.
Versus
which is
just,
also yeah. Why I asked the question, I wonder why. You know, God sends Philip to help this Ethiopian understand versus just the spirit. Because I hear a lot of people say, I don't need a degree. I don't need to listen to anyone with a degree. People have been brainwashed by going to school and studying theology. I'm just going to let the spirit explain it to me. And, you know, if that's where you would like to be, you are more than welcome to be there. And, you know, and if that works for you, that's great. But I think that there are reasons why people spend years and years and years and years and years studying these things. And I think that people who want to understand the text should draw on the knowledge that's available. And people who have had the privilege of doing this kind of deep study have a responsibility to share what they know.
But I think the part that maybe freaks people out is, well, they're human, God's not, so they're wrong, God's right somehow. But I don't know what that means because I really don't understand how this was all put together anyway. So maybe I'm going to be like Ken talked about earlier. Well, sorry, bro, you listened to the humans. You didn't just follow what... You know, I don't know what was in your gut and that the spirit gave you or whatever. So I also think it, you know, you learn and over time you find out new things and it can be deeper, it can be more meaningful, it can be more understood and applied. And that's all good, but it doesn't mean the person that didn't have that information is somehow held to, well, you were born 50 years too soon. Sorry. Good luck in hell. You know, I think that's the other part is we have to give God the credit that personal relationship Ken's talking about, whatever version you're going to read it and get to know Jesus. And then that's really where it happens. The rest of it can be, it can be right, it can be wrong, it could be marginally off, it could be way, you know.
So that's the thing that I think is, that I have come to in my own personal journey with the Bible is when I was younger, it was very, very, very important to get it right.
To get it right,
I felt
yeah.
like I needed yeah. to know for sure everything and get it right, because if I didn't get it right,
we knew
I'd
what the
be,
consequences were.
You know, yeah. I would be, you know, cast into outer darkness. But the fact is, the Bible, it's not about whether or not, whether you can get it right or not. The important thing is the engagement with it, and the engagement with other people in our conversations about it, and our openness to being able to hear what the text is saying, hear what God is saying to us through the text, but then also be open for and malleable for, you know, variations or changes or anything like that, because, you know, you can, if you're flexible enough to bend, you won't break. And I think that there are people that I went to school with who, when they found out many of the things that they discovered in seminary, they said, forget this. I don't want anything to do with this at all. And they left and became atheists because they were so brittle in their theological understanding that when it was challenged, they just broke. But if you can bend with it and you can look at it as, we're experiencing the text versus we're trying to nail it down and get yeah. it right. I think that it creates a different relationship with the text.
Well, everything that we just talked about, when again asked, what's preventing you and what's preventing you from sharing Christ? And I'd be like, all of the above. I'm confused, sir.
But if you tell, if you're right. telling your story, then if you're no, telling yeah. your story, then it's not about whether or not your story is right or you're getting it exactly right. You're talking about your own experience. And when you're studying the Bible with people, you can share, look, this is what the text says here and this is what the text says here. And it's a fascinating exploration.
Yeah. But I think we let it get in our head and we let it get in the way of, well, I couldn't possibly know, again, for until you know that it's not always about understanding it or getting it or getting it right every time. It's about where you are in part. It's where your journey is. And I think that's where it, Ken said, it doesn't matter how much money you have. It doesn't matter how intelligent you think you are. These things do not matter, because if God calls, God equips. And I think that's the part where maybe the most important part about just moving forward, what's preventing you? Your story is enough to help somebody. You know, someone's going to hear what you have gone through, what you think, maybe a way that you look at a verse that might be a little different than the way someone else might see it and go, oh, I like that. I mean, there's a handful of people when we moved to Florida that really made an impression on me. There's a couple of pastors, a couple of friends who all in the same group could sit and say, that part I don't think you're right on, or this or that. And everyone's like, all right, ready to go to lunch? And I'm like, wow, where I come from, we gotta wrestle this out. Someone's gotta go down and someone's gotta be wrong. And, you know, and it was just like, I don't know what to do with this, because it was really weird. And no one, while people were definitely, you know, the eyebrow would furrow a little bit when tried to make a point sometimes, but it would never be put on or taken as, I think you're wrong, or I think you're not as good as me, or you have a lot to learn. You know, you've got a lot to learn. It was always taken in and said, well, this is why I think differently, but, you know, this is, you know, you're on that journey, and, you know, keep reading. Here's more resources in that area that you're thinking about or that you're reading about. Use this too, and try to see if this doesn't help you come to something where you can say, oh yeah, I think I'm good where I'm at, and be comfortable, and then not be judged for where you are in your journey, but being taken along with the group, no matter where you are, whether someone's way ahead, but you're all walking alongside of each other. That was weird. That was really weird for me, and I think that's what we're talking about.
Sounds weirdly healthy to me.
I know, weirdly. It really felt weird, too. Lucas, do we have any questions?
We got two questions, but they were already answered in the service, but they were good questions, so.
Yeah, let's run through. We have a little bit of time. Let's run through them quick.
All right. So the first one was from Debbie. I never thought of this story this way. Wow. How do we square this kind of radical acceptance and openness to God's leading with the human control of organized religion?
So I gave my answer during the worship service. Anybody else want to weigh in?
I think it comes down to what we just talked about. I think finding someone that you can read the Bible with, or take what you've heard at church, or if you go to a Bible study class Saturday morning or otherwise, and finding someone that you can share ideas and have that interaction, and then, you know, find out what the differences are and what you think, and, you know, organized religion. I know we have a lot of us grew up in a way where it was like we felt like we were under the thumb, but also I think there's a lot of ways where we can use those as, you know, guidelines and boundaries, and being humble enough to not think that you couldn't be wrong, but also finding someone that can help kind of lead you. The Bible studies. Let's hold the next question. Ken, you talked about Bible studies. How do we get involved with those? You mentioned being part of, like, wanting to learn how to give a Bible study or actually be a part of a Bible study. I'll put that in the show notes and in the new Slack channel that you'll notice in the notes as well. So,
yeah, if you want to, if you're interested in studying the theological beliefs of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Somebody came up to me and said, let's not call it Adventist Biblical or Adventist Beliefs class. Let's call it Life and Teachings of Jesus. And I thought about that. And Life and Teachings of Jesus to me is just a different class. There's that, but then you've got all the New Testament, you've got Old Testament. So anyway, I think I'll stick with ABC,
yeah,
Adventist Beliefs class. It's the Seventh-day Adventist Church's take on theology and what the Bible is saying. And so, yeah, if you're interested in studying that, just send me an email at ken@wholelife.church, ken@wholelife.church. And if you're wanting to learn how to do Bible studies with other people, same thing, ken@wholelife.church. And we'll be starting that sometime in August. Okay. I don't have the firm dates nailed down on when it'll begin, but I know Freud will be doing one kind of class here at the church during Sabbath school on Saturdays, and then I'll be doing an online version that's going to be actually different than what he's doing. He's doing a book that has about 8 or 10 chapters in it, and I'm going to be doing one that's a little bit more... We'll actually be doing 2 or 3 lessons at a time together.
Okay.
So that'll be happening. So, if that's something you're interested in, just ken@wholelife.church, and we'll put you on the list and make sure that you get the emails. And then if you want to be a part of it, you can sign up and do it. And I think the fun thing, we're trying some different things out a little bit. And one of the things we're trying to do is with this round, we'll have 3 different Zoom options. Okay. Every week. So you can pick the Zoom option each week that works best for you. So if this week it's better to do it Sunday evening, and next week it's better for you to do it Wednesday morning, it doesn't matter. Nice. You can pick whichever one works for you, but we'll basically have those open each week, and you just fit into the one that works best for you. And there'll be 3 different options. I'll probably have one that's in the morning, one that's around the middle of the day, and then another one that's in the evening, just trying to
catch as many as we can.
Yeah, just make it as easy as I can for people to find one that'll work for them.
All right. Well, check out the show notes and take the invite to the new Slack channel. They'll all be there as well, and then we'll catch up with a few things we didn't post last week. And what's happening? Where are we headed this week?
Oh, it's going to be a shipwreck.
Shipwreck. We Jonah this week?
Nope.
Nope.
We're doing Paul.
No, he didn't. That wasn't a shipwreck.
We're doing Paul. Paul was a shipwreck.
That was a ship toss or a
We also doing communion.
Yes. Oh, that's right. And foot washing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there will be foot washing available between services.
Yeah, good. Good. And that's always, I don't know. Is that outside this week, do you think? Or is that weather permitting?
So, Melanie, is it between, so is during Sabbath school time, or will there be some before and after?
Will be some before and after. Yeah, okay. There will be some overlap.
So if we come early for first service, we would, or would it be between after first?
You know, I'm going to have to check with Vasily on that, but I think typically we started a little bit before first service is finished, and then it continues on until second service.
All right. Well, maybe we can get that in the events calendar, too, once we've made a specific...
Sure. And a room number. I'll let you know the room number.
Ah, okay. Yeah, room number and time. We can get that in the events calendar, so check that out. The link will also be in the show notes. Awesome. So I think that's it. Man, it's hard to believe that it's already... halfway through July, and this summer series has just like flown. Well, I just lost it. I was like looking for a good water word, but is anybody? The current was swift.
Swept away.
I don't know.
Flowed through.
I know. I flowed through, and I was like, yeah, that's pretty lame.
You know what?
Anyway,
I've already had 2 meetings for the Christmas program.
Wow.
What?
Look at you.
This is how July goes at Whole Life.
Good.
It's like what's happening 6 months from now.
So. Music videos, Christmas, Christmas, and... Yeah.
We are overflowing for sure.
We are overflowing.
There you go. Good job. Thank you. We're overflowing because there's greater things...
To come
in the future, which... They better start coming quick.
Yeah.
Awesome. Guys, thanks for listening. And thank you for all the feedback on the story time. My mind has been thinking all weekend. So I know some others have as well. So if you have any other suggestions or any like format ideas, and Yolanda, I think you said you listened to the podcast. So welcome to you and Jeremy and Zoe. And I forgot the older sister. Forgot her name. Sorry.
Oh, man.
I know. That's really bad. 3 of 4 though, like for me that's a win. But we'll talk about it. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.